Good afternoon, everybody. Is everyone doing okay? Having a good conference? Good eating, drinking, everything else? My name is Carsten. That's my real name. Most people seem to know me by my nickname, which is Rasta. It's a long story. You can ask me sometime later if you really want to know. I work for Samsung Electronics. I'm based in Korea. And I've actually been working on what you see today as Tizen now for several years. At the very heart of Tizen, in the graphics layer, is a display system or a library called EVIS. EVIS is not your traditional OpenGL or Cairo, etc. style library, rendering library. It is something very different. It can live on top of these kind of things. But it sits there at the very core, handling how pixels get to the screen. And today, I'm going to go talk a bit about that. If you have any questions, feel free to ask at any time. But either speak up very loudly, or if you can come to a mic, that would be really good. I'll try and repeat your question. If I remember to do that. So EVIS is part of a collection of libraries which together we've called EFL, or the Enlightenment Foundation Libraries. These libraries do a whole bunch of things, from main loop through to EVIS, which is rendering and canvas. There is Edge, which is designed for putting objects together in collections on top of EVIS. There's networking libraries, there are D-bus interface libraries, there's everything that we needed. But they were specifically written by the same team working on Enlightenment, me and other fellow silly people who like to do these kind of things. And we wrote them in order to make Enlightenment, which, interestingly enough, is not a normal application, is in fact a window manager, which does make EFL slightly different. If you look at libraries like GTK or Qt, they were primarily written for implementing of applications as opposed to window managers. There are a few parts of the libraries which are a little bit different in either design or in features when you focus on one or the other. One of the things that has always been important to me is staying lean and mean, not using up many resources if you can avoid it. That means memory, CPU, and disk. Disk equating to flash these days on most mobile devices and even laptops and desktops. But we don't want to lose any features by remaining lean. Normally, there's a trade-off of drop a feature to save memory or CPU, or spend the amount. We try and get both. I like to have my cake and eat it too. Almost all our development over the years has actually been sunk into the libraries and not the window manager. People ask this question all the time, when are you going to release? It's mostly because we're spending our time working on releasing the libraries, not the window manager. So it's a bit like GTK came from GIMP. They were writing a paint program, and at some point they got distracted into writing a toolkit. Very similar thing happened here with Enlightenment. They do cover a wide range of functionality. There is much more than just EVIS or Edge or the graphics parts. So do note that we have like data storage and serialization, deserialization things as well. And we actually use that at the core, a lot of the graphics stuff. Only about 26% of the active maintained code in our SVN tree, that we of code we actually release and tarballs, is Enlightenment. The rest is EFL. So in terms of size, it only consumes a small portion. But in SVN, we have a lot of other stuff that is actually fairly unrelated to what we release as EFL Enlightenment. So that consumes about half of it. Within EFL, which are a whole collection of libraries, often building on top of each other or complementing each other, EVIS sits about in the middle. It's above the lower level data structure libraries. There are, for example, Embryo is actually a bytecode interpreting virtual machine and compiler. It comes from Small or Pawn, which it's called these days. It sits on top of data structure stuff, which is EAT, that's for encoding, decoding. And on top of it, many other libraries are built. They use EVIS in order to get stuff to the display. In terms of Tizen, EFL actually also sits somewhere in the middle of things. It sits below the browser, the web browser, and thus the web runtime. They use EFL basically to get pixels to the screen. Reality is that the browser pretty much uses EFL mostly as a frame buffer. It divides web pages into tiles or regions and then tells EFLs to manage those. But other parts of the browser, like its location bar and other bits of toolkits, are actually dumped out into the scene graph as full object trees. Native applications, if you have native applications, if you look at the Tizen emulator, at least most of those applications, last time I looked, were actually native applications. And they actually use EFL for lists and buttons and all sorts of things. And all of that sits on top of lower level, so X, OpenGL, whatever else happens to sit underneath that, in order to get stuff to the screen or stuff to your kernel and out the network socket, etc. So why should we use EVIS? What's so amazing about it? Well, interestingly enough, there seems to be a trend lately in toolkits, and the trend is, hey, let's make scene graphs. Qt is getting there now with Qt5. GTK has been moving there. We were moving there about 10 years ago. EVIS is actually relatively old. It started in about 2001 as a result of realizing that a scene graph is actually by far and wide the best way to abstract a UI and the GUI in general. Now, what is so special about EVIS? Well, apart from being mature and old and having explored a lot of these things, it is actually very fast. Its software rendering, which actually includes its own internal engine, is not really to be sniffed at. EVIS used to have a Cairo engine several years ago. I didn't actually end up finishing the Cairo engine, but the Cairo engine ended up benchmarking at about 1/20th of the speed of EVIS's own software renderer. So I didn't actually complete the engine, but it is very, very fast and usable. What is very important to embedded is not only to support OpenGL, it supports OpenGL ES2. That means we make use of shaders. EVIS's shaders are as minimal as you can get. In my experience, the less you do on a shader, the better, and it really does matter even if it's only one or two instructions less. It is actually a measurable difference. So the shaders are specially chosen to do the minimum amount of work that's needed to get stuff done. It actually is pretty much based on running in 32-bit color internally, so it tries to remain high quality at all times. It doesn't really make any compromises of let's go 16-bit and, you know, try and get some speed. It tries to get all its speed at 32-bit color. So you don't sacrifice any quality, really, but on at least most of the smartphone platforms that you will know today, we do retain a good solid 60 frames a second in doing most things until you really push it. Memory footprint wise, it's actually fairly lean. It does very well, even compared to most toolkits and desktops. As a very quick thumb up in the air, measuring this against an Ubuntu install with Unity and Compiz, it ended up using about 60% less memory than Unity, doing exactly the same thing. OpenGL compositing, you know, web browser app, wallpaper background, all the same kind of features, file manager up and running, et cetera, et cetera. So feature for feature, you're about the same level and using 60% less memory. Just to let you know, that could be reduced massively if the OpenGL drivers didn't throw memory, you know, into the waste bin as they do. They really could be leaned down. So it doesn't use a lot of memory, which is very good when you're on small devices where you have much less memory. So why do you care about EVIS? Well, if you're going to play with Tizen, unless you're going to majorly rip the guts out of it and replace it, you'll probably run into Evis sooner or later. As a OEM or a platform vendor, someone who's porting it to a platform, you will see it. Hopefully, it will never, ever be a problem. Since there is full software rendering, it will always work. Whether you have OpenGL drivers or not, it will function. It is, in fact, perfectly usable without having any acceleration. If you have drivers, need to deal with OpenGL, then it'll start mattering. Because Evis is not Quake, most OpenGL drivers are tested with games and not with 2D rendering. They make sure they run Unreal or Quake or Angry Birds. And if they manage to do that, they pass, basically. But when you try and stretch them and use them for other 2D, they often tend to hit bugs. So I've definitely seen it before, as drivers straight from the GPU vendors tend to have a lot of problems, and they end up being fixed. So knowing what Evis does and how it works will help you at least identify that. So why do we care about software rendering at all if we have OpenGL then? You don't necessarily even have OpenGL. The first time you get your SoC, you're trying to build a device, often you don't even get the drivers yet. Someone's still working on them, trying to port them. So you want to start doing device bring up, get things working, start writing applications, testing UI, testing user experience to some extent. And that requires that things work. And if you require GL, then you're going to have to wait till it's functioning. Some low-end hardware, if you want to make MP3 players or really low-end phones, may not come with GPUs at all, because a GPU on an SoC is an extra expense that you have to pay for when buying an SoC. So you may choose not to go to that expense. A lot of GPU vendors also like to charge you for their binary drivers as well. So in the past, a lot of devices have come out without it because the OEM didn't want to pay that software fee, even though the hardware was there. Also, OpenGL, in order to retain speed, use something called texture atlases, where you put all your images in like one big texture, so to speak. Unfortunately, in order to gain that speed, you pay a memory footprint price. So it may not always be what you want. Phones have much less memory, in the range of 128 to 512 meg. These days, they're now beginning to hit 1 gig. But they're still much less than what you find on your average PC. Also, you don't tend to have swaps. So when you run out of memory on a device, you pay a very big price. That means applications die. You don't just start swapping and get a bit slower. So you really want to avoid that if you can. Evis is a high-level abstraction. As a high-level abstraction, it allows more optimizations to happen outside the space of either a widget set or toolkit that's on top or an application. So Evis has a very, very wide view of what's going on. And it actually knows where most data comes from. So it can do things like remove stuff from memory and load them back in when and if you need it. For example, your application goes into the background. It's no longer active. But you want your application to hang around. You can just allow it to go idle, and in fact, with a bit of more infrastructure from EFL, it'll ask Evis, please dump everything from memory that you can actually reload from a file, and actually free all images, fonts, and dump everything out of memory, and remove textures, get rid of everything it can that it knows it can get back from a file, and therefore really minimize its memory footprint while in the background. And so when it comes foreground again, first time it has to render something, it'll wake up, render, and go, ooh, I need that data again, and load it all back in, decode it. Sure, you pay a small latency cost of having to load and decode, but you save the memory. So having the knowledge of where that data comes from and how to decode it allows that layer to do all of this without applications needing to know or care. Having a high level also makes it easier to write applications. The application programmer does not have to do all the optimizing themselves, because the canvas layer will go and do that for you. And it's all centralized in one place. Less work for you to do. It also means that porting to other display systems is, in fact, incredibly easy. For example, Wayland. In fact, we already have ports for EFL for Wayland. It already works. Client-side borders work, et cetera, et cetera. It also allows for these ports to be much more optimal. So the Wayland port For Evis, for example, we both have an OpenGL ES renderer and a software renderer. It actually does both. And the application doesn't need to know or care whether it's EGL, GLES, or software rendering. It just deals with the canvas. It makes prototyping without a device much easier because you can display, let's say, devices used Wayland instead of X11. But you could display on your desktop an X11 and have exactly the same display because the application doesn't need to know or care. You can use Evis today on your desktop. It works perfectly. In fact, Enlightenment uses it all. Its compositor is based on Evis. It allows for faster debugging and testing cycles if you do things on your desktop as opposed to cross-compile, copy to device, run on device. It massively speeds it up. So you can go and look in a Tizen SDK. There's EFL lurking there, and Evis is lurking inside of it. There are actually Enlightenment-based distributions that come with this too. We have a list of them on enlightenment.org in the download section. There's all the source code. We do use SVN, and it's all there. We do make snapshots of stuff and releases at a relatively regular interval. In fact, we just released about a week or so ago a bunch of our libraries. Some went 1.0, some became 1.2, etc. There are scripts to go and download this and compile it all for you. Our SVN trunk is actually where all our development happens, and surprisingly, it's stable. It's probably one of the most stable trunks or heads you will find around. Most people want to avoid it and don't want to touch it because their experiences with such things are this ceases to work all the time. Ours surprisingly actually works most of the time and only has problems a very, very small amount of the time. It's because we eat our own dog food. We literally, us as developers, we use our own trunk every single day. So we update, rebuild, compile, and use it all day long. If it doesn't work, we fix it. So we discover it very quickly. So where does Evis glue in into an application lifecycle and how it works? Well, most applications have a main loop of some sort when it comes to a GUI. They sit there and they wait for events, they handle events, then they change things, they go and render, and then go back to sleep, waiting for more events. ECore is a library for handling a main loop, for handling input events, an event queue, event stream, delayed actions, so timers, animation, so you can say, just please call this whenever I have to animate. An animation source can come from anywhere. This just provides a big glue layer, so between you and this clock and events, between display system, so it can glue in events from X and hand them to you just as general events in your event pipeline. It gives you networking IPC. It gives you some threading stuff as well, a bit like Grand Central Dispatch that you find in OS X. And it also handles gluing in events and passing them off to the canvas. So with canvas, you'll get callbacks on actual objects. So the event loop looks pretty much like that. You sit, you spend most of your time hopefully waiting and sleeping for something, waiting for the user to do something, waiting for a timeout. And then you wake up, you handle the incoming events, you change the state of your world, you move something somewhere, you fill in some text in an entry, you change the color of something. And then when you're done changing it, you're going to go back to sleep. Just before you go back to sleep, that is when one of the glue elements in ECore Evis tells Evis to go and render. It says, please go and render anything that may or may not have possibly updated in your canvas. And that is where Evis figures out what to do. So Evis figures out what to do by having a scene graph. A scene graph is a retain mode rendering system where every visible object, or even invisible objects, that you need to render is held and maintained by the scene graph. It knows where that object is, whether it's visible or not, what its properties are, where the data comes from for that object, the file on disk or the font to be used and its size and the text to be used, etc. And it maintains all of that in memory at all times. So, but it only keeps that scene graph, that graph of objects in memory as a guarantee. Everything else is not guaranteed to be in memory. It may or may not be in memory at any time. So when you want to do things, you just move an object somewhere, change its position, resize it, change its color, what file is there, etc. It also handles loading of actual resources, so your fonts. You just tell it what font you want to use, the size, some text, and it will deal with finding the font. The same with images. You say, look, use this image over here. It will deal with loading, decoding that image, getting it to memory, scaling it wherever needed, etc. It also tries to turn all rendering into a NOP if it can. That means if you didn't change anything between waking up, handling some events, and going to sleep, Evis will just look at the canvas and go, ooh, no change flags, and go straight back and return and do nothing. It'll sleep. It will actually then walk object trees looking for change flags and trying to figure out if something changed, if something is being marked as changed. It'll actually inspect all the properties and try and figure out if something really did change. And if it did, it'll render. If nothing changed, it'll actually skip the rendering entirely. So it'll do some work to figure it out, but not do the full work of rendering. It also will try and optimize the rendering either for software, OpenGL, or for that matter, any other engine that is there, by cutting out work it knows in advance it's going to throw away. So it's done for you without you having to know. It handles generating scale data for you, so you don't have to handle your own pixmaps or bitmaps or surfaces. It will keep caches for you. It knows that you use this image 20 times and at the same size. It will throw out the original data and only keep the scaled version. It does all that for you. You don't need to know or care. It makes life being a programmer much simpler. You can be silly, stupid, and not care, and it will pick up the pieces and optimize for you. Because I like being lazy. I don't want to optimize my own code. That's why I like write libraries to optimize it for me. It will try and put things in parallel threads where it can. So right now, we actually have a parallel preloader, so it can load stuff into memory ahead of time before you need it. We are actually putting more stuff into threads that prepare things in advance, in parallel. So again, the programmer doesn't need to know or do that. It can remove stuff from memory because it can just repopulate memory exactly how it was, because it knows where the data came from and how to decode it. This definitely helps save a lot of memory at key moments. It means even though you're active, a lot of data sometimes become unused. So it's an unused bit of data in your data set. It can actually throw that out as well, because it knows you're not using it anymore, and it knows how to repopulate it. The canvas isn't just flat. It actually has a tree. Objects can have children. So a parent will manage its children, and you can just play with just that parent object. And inside of that parent are all its children. You don't have to know, okay, you just know you deal with the parent. So often when you write applications, you're creating a layout in your application. And that layout often looks something like that. Got a bunch of icons with text underneath it, and maybe a scroll bar or a button, maybe no scroll bar, maybe a bar of buttons at the top for actions, who knows. But generally speaking, your user interface consists of elements that you often move around, scroll around, show, hide, change the properties of. And Evis is designed specifically to mimic that in its structure. You can create complex objects just out of putting simple ones together. So just add a base, add some text on top, add another layer, it looks shiny, add another bit of shininess on top, and OpenOffice does a really horrible thing of scaling things there. And then you end up with a button with shiny bits. And you can change the text separately from the other layers and not have to re-render anything. You don't have to know or care. Just go to the text object and say, your text is now cancel instead of OK. That's all you have to do. Everything else is done for you. You just do that. It tends to mimic what actual user interface designers do when they actually sit down and draw user interfaces, when they use Illustrator or Photoshop. They will break things up into lots of layers, into these elements. They will create buttons that are like that with their shiny parts and their texting and so on. And Evis mimics that directly by allowing the objects to do exactly what the user interface designer is doing. You only have to modify what you need, so leave the other layers and elements alone and only modify your text, just as before. So you can make almost anything with enough objects. And if you can't, there's always the image object where you can just dump pixels into. Libraries like Edge basically allow you to take a collection of objects, predefined in a file on disk that's already laid out, and just say, create me one object from this collection. It'll be loaded into memory, and all the children will be magically created for you, and you don't need to know or care. They will resize, rescale. You can send events to them, and they will react to those events. They can react to actual input events all by themselves. These edge files are portable, so once compiled, it can be loaded on any architecture, on any system. It doesn't care. And when they get compiled, they actually get the text really stripped out of them, converted into a binary data structure tree that is actually very, very fast to load and decode. So they're actually very, very fast. It also handles all the animations, so you want to change state. This is actually where Qt's QML has at least gotten a lot of ideas from, for people who are familiar with that. When you have an object or an element with two states and you tween between them over a period of time, Edge was actually doing that many years ago. It's quite old by now and very mature. So Edge gives you all these things, but they layer on top of Evis, and you can layer almost anything on top. So you put it together, enough elements put together, complex elements, you can have pretty much any user interface you like. So everything you see, or most of the things you see on the Tizen devices today, it's exactly the same. They're just put together. So not only does it actually keep in memory the map of all the objects, it also handles input and routing the input to the object where the input happened. So you would feed input events from an input device. Normally, eCore takes care of that for you. Evis would go and get data from fonts and images. The application or a toolkit or Edge would make state changes. Evis will go through a generic rendering path, and then it has rendering engines that can output it to anything you like. So far we have rendering engines for rendering to memory, rendering to X, using XCB as well for transport, shared memory using OpenGL, OpenGL ES2. There's a Direct3D engine, there's a DirectFB engine, there's SDL engines, there's Windows GDI engines, there's even a PlayStation 3 rendering engine as well. So it doesn't really much matter to the application, they all see the same canvas, and the routing just goes via a particular output. And that allows you to accelerate or use particular hardware to improve performance or save power or whatever it is. The two main paths people use is the software rendering engines or the OpenGL ones. So when it renders to try and figure out if something has changed, it looks at all the objects. And let's say the rectangle wanted to move and a little cloud moved as well over to here. So Evis really just figures out the regions that changed by examining all the objects and their states. It goes and will render only those, although this will actually depend on the engine. Each engine can make a different decision as to how to do updates. And then you'll end up with your result. Now the application programmer doesn't need to know or care. He just goes and moves his objects and walks away. Doesn't need to know or care. It's one thing less they have to do. The software renderer, we have MMX, SSE, SSE2, SSE3. There's also Neon assembly for ARM. It's all there. We can also use Pixman as well for doing the rendering if you want. There are options when you compile it. It always works everywhere, so you don't have to know or care. It will actually detect these particular optimized paths at runtime, so you can compile something with Neon and or SSE3, and at runtime it'll go and turn those off if the processor can't do it. It has really high quality scaling algorithms and software, full super sampling, everything else. It caches data and dynamically generates whatever cache data it needs. And it also will handle rotation on output for you as well. The OpenGL ES engine, or ES2, it uses texture atlases for speed up to avoid changing GL context. It defers texture upload until it absolutely needs to upload the textures. It tries to do out-of-order rendering, what most 3D games try and do, which is you batch your rendering for things that use the same texture ID. So it tries to do that too. It has, as I mentioned before, specialized shaders to minimize overhead, and it actually, I've measured it, and it actually does really help. It doesn't use GL only as a glorified compositing engine. It actually gets GL to render everything. So all text is rendered each character at a time in GL as an actual geometry. Well, each glyph is a texture, but that glyph. So that's why some tests actually generate tens of thousands of vertices for just one frame. It has text and polygons and blah, 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 blah to do all of that. And it tries to avoid texture uploads if your GL implementation supports that, ISO 0, zero copy texture upload. We can render to X11, XEB, as I mentioned before. We do have Wayland support now, so the shared memory path and the EGL, GLES path as well. We can go to raw frame buffer, memory buffers, as I said, PS3, SDL, Windows, etc. For input, we can support a whole bunch of formats at the moment. So that should be BMP. BMP, EAT. EAT are actually the archive files that EAT generates for Edge in which the image data is encoded. ICA files, JPEG, PNG, etc., etc. A big long list there. And even video formats. We can load frames from video formats too. We support whatever FreeType supports, so TrueType, OpenType, etc. We support UTF-8 for all text encoding. We support right to left, left to right, and complex text, so Hindi, Arabic, Hebrew, etc. They all render and work correctly as well. So, any questions?
For the software engine, everything is native, so you have different, like you have one for x86, one for ARM.
Okay, the question was, for the software engine, do we have a software engine for each native platform? So the answer to that is, there is a single shared software engine. The internals are all 32-bit color. There are fast paths, so assembly paths, for certain operations on certain platforms. So if you produce a x86 binary, that's i386 or x664, you will get the assembly that the routines to that do MMX, SSE, 2, 3, 4, and et cetera, et cetera. They'll get them, but they will turn off those assembly routines if your CPU can't do that particular version. And it's exactly the same on ARM. So there's a generic C code, C rendering, and it'll also compile the Neon stuff. It'll check if you have Neon. If you do, it'll go and use the Neon paths for that. If not, it won't. There is actually even some AltiVec code in there as well for PowerPC, which is kind of becoming less important these days.
Second question then. Have you considered something like LLVM pipe?
Question, have I considered LLVM pipe? I have not, because I haven't really looked at it. The software rendering so far has been fast enough, haven't been struggling. I mentioned before, like, Cairo has sped up a lot over the years. But at the time I was doing it, Evis was 20 times faster on my desktop. And I kind of looked at it and went, I don't really need to look at something. A day I need to look at it, I will. But I have, if there is a benefit, if it's something good, if someone thinks it's really going to help, open to patches, input, examples, tests, saying something, we are always open to improving it. But it's at the point of, it's good enough. It's good enough so we don't have to go and optimize. What will be our gain? Will we gain nothing? Will we gain 10%, 20%? Will we triple in speed? I don't know. My guess is we're not going to triple in speed. My guess is we're not going to double in speed. My guess is we're probably with something LLVM pipe in the range of 0 to maybe 20 or 30% speed up. That's just an instinctive guess of having done graphics for most of my life. But I could be wrong. And it might actually be really good. If someone has a really good demo or example of, like, look how amazingly better it is, absolutely. Yeah. Yes? Gustavo was saying that LLVM pipe is going to save us not in what we're doing now, but if we had to do many, many, many more operations, it would save us writing those extra ones. That's absolutely true. Being 2D, we do have a more limited set of things we have to do. We don't have to compile generic shader language in that someone provides. We do have a limited set of operations, which is an advantage, and we have optimized most of them. There are some we have not optimized. Some just use the C code because no one's ever bothered, or it hasn't been considered a path worth dealing with. It is also possible that machine-generated code could actually beat our handwritten code. It is possible. I could imagine it could if it was very well done, if LMVPipe was really good. I'm open to that possibility. It could also even optimize at runtime and detect some things we don't already detect via input parameters. So it could probably maybe detect a bit more. So it might simplify code. And the question then is, if it simplifies code, I actually like that too. Simplification is good. But what is our price for that simplification? And we will pay that price at runtime. Is it worth paying? I don't actually know. But if someone has a good idea, sure. Any more questions? Yes.
I think it was about 2005, 2006, the Blink team on Lightning 17 got me interested to check out the source code. I pulled from the Subversion repository the entire EFL stack to get to E17. And at the time, I was using an OpenBSD box with like a Pentium 3 like 800 megahertz processor. And the whole thing ran smoothly, even with full screen animations. And all over the IRC channel. And I said, hey, I'm running OpenBSD, I can't compile the source code. And it came, actually, the problem was that OpenBSD had some change in the C library that was defiant from like every other NIX flavor out there. And the whole EFL stack is highly portable. What platforms would EFL not be portable to?
Since then, we have, let me repeat. 2006, you took a look at Lightman and EFL and you basically stuck it on a BSD box, open BSD box, different free BSD, NetBSD, very different. And you had problems compiling due to libc issues.
It was like a one to two line change in compiling.
Sure. We may have made that change in the meantime. But what we have done also in the meantime is we actually have two libraries for helping this kind of porting. One's called Evil. And Evil we use for porting to Windows. It was yesterday that our crazy French guys released our Windows MSI installer. So in fact, there is an EFL setup.exe, which you can download and just run and keep hitting next, and it will run on Windows. It apparently runs perfectly fine. And Evil is a library we use there, and it fills in the gap of libc APIs that are missing from Mingua 32. There's another library which another crazy French guy has created. Yes, we have lots of crazy French guys in the EFL world. And it's called Exotic. And Exotic is for porting to exotic operating systems, RTOSs, PlayStation 3 kind of thing, when you have a very, very minimal libc that's missing a lot of features. So I don't know, but we could easily use that and override one of the OpenBSD libraries. But then again, in this day and age, I mean, Linux is almost the dominant Unix by such a country mile that it's becoming less and less relevant. But if and when needed, sure, it can be done. If we encounter it, we might put in compile time detects. So, but yes, we can do it. We probably have done at least some extent of that and in different places. Jeff, yes.
Yeah,
Jeff Hoogland, Bodhi Linux, yes.
I haven't watched the movie much, but they seem to be really promoting the EFL stack. And I was wondering, do you interface with those guys much?
Yes, Jeff Hoogland. I know his name, full name. Repeat what you're saying. You have a friend who actually takes the EFL stack and does an offshoot of Ubuntu Linux called Bodhi Linux. That is, in fact, one of the Linux distributions that come with Enlightenment EFL by default. So for people who want to see it and try it out, or at least see it working in action, that's one way to see it. You can try that one out. But yes, we do interface to him and talk to him. I actually talked to him the other week because he actually wasn't meeting the license requirements. He actually was violating licenses. So yeah, I told him to fix it. Someone actually pointed out to me, and I went, "Oh, you're right," and I pointed out to him. So he'll fix that.
His licensees were pretty awesome.
I hear so. I've never actually tried them. For me, as a core developer, it's not really something I would use, because then I have both a packaged version of EFL and the one I compile every day. And I would have to basically rip Bodhi apart to remove its EFL enlightenment bits, at which point it's kind of not worth using for me. But
Do you think that his presentation of EFL properly demonstrates how it should be put together?
I'm going to be, okay. It does something like Bodhi properly show off how EFL should be put together? The answer is, to some extent, yes, but it could be a lot better. There is a lot of room for improvement. So some of that is really aesthetic. Some of it, they he has a lot of very kind of clunky, ugly themes floating around and setups. Some of it is he does get some of the packaging wrong in some of the setups. Again, the license stuff, he hasn't followed the licensing correctly, and I have pulled him up on that one. So it's not the best, but it is still good. It's very good. It could be better. So. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Very enthusiastic.
Yep. Cool. I think we're out of time. So if anyone has any questions, I'll be out there. But thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of the day.